Whether you're dealing with doze and heat and bucks and rut, the winter blues, the marathon of kidding season in the spring, or show season in the summer, Nate Funk and John Kane of Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast, are with you every step of the way, bringing you interviews from various breeders, judges, and others from all over the country. We're always covering the latest ADGA news and covering topics to help make us all better dairy goat breeders. What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. I'm John, and this week I'm joined by my co-host, Nate Funk.
Hey, brother, what's going on? Good to be back.
Yeah, you had a nice week off. It's been forever since you've gotten a week off, so hopefully you got to rest up a little bit.
It was good to rest up, good to just take a little bit and be with the family. That's what it's all about. How was your week?
My week's been okay. Everybody in my herd's in heat, and we're not breeding yet until October. We shoot for March kittings, as most of our listeners know by now. So we've been kind of just hanging out, and we've switched to once-a-day milking in preparation to dry our does off.
Ooh.
We're just keeping on keeping on.
You guys haven't had to build a boat yet. Hurricane Ida, I think, swept up through you.
Yeah, we did get about, I think, from like 2 or 3 p.m. yesterday until about 7 o'clock this morning, we got 5 inches of rain.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's we're lucky that our drainage for our property is pretty good. Unfortunately, about a quarter of that drainage runs through our buck pen, so that's kind of a fall-winter project, is working on drainage for the buck pen and re-fencing their area and making them happier.
This past summer, we put in drainage, kind of a French ditch, French drainage, dig the ditch and put the larger stone in the pipe and stone on top of that and gravel on top of that. Works great. Back of our barn, even with all the rain we've been getting, is dry.
That's good.
Yeah.
I know you guys used to be pretty wet. We're probably going to put like a half cut, probably 12 inch pipe, and then bury it in, kind of do a makeshift French drain.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes, but that's future John's problem.
get yourself a mini excavator for that project to make it a lot easier.
Well, we're all rock, buddy, so it's going to be a backbreaker either way you cut it.
Definitely a mini X then.
Well, we have the real thing. We have a big backhoe, so we don't need an excavator.
Oh, you don't need a mini X then.
We got the big boy toys. Whoa. What's going on with you this week, man?
Oh, well,
for the last 2 weeks.
Well, see here, we've been kind of laying low, watching all our friends go to all these county fairs and kick butt. You guys did a good job there in Dutchess.
We did have a pretty decent week at Dutchess. I can't complain.
We've been, kind of looking at the barn, looking at the animals, and trying to get plans for breeding season set and figure out changes we want to do to the barn. A lot of late summer planning for, future projects. There's some that are, we'll figure it out a little bit later, but that we're kind of grumbling about possibly, looking at. Otherwise, we've been getting ready for a breeding season. Unlike you, we've only had like one or two does come in heat.
Lucky you.
I know. Well, except unlike you, we would probably you know, breed them at this point. We would toss them to the box or AI them. You know, we like that early February kidding, early February through March. It usually ends up for us being early February through June.
I don't know how you guys deal with that.
Well, it's, we'll get into how we deal with our stress later. It's been kind of quiet. You know, we've been spending time with the family. We've been dealing with things around the house, which you don't get to do or that get neglected during show season.
For sure.
Yeah. Otherwise, we've been, looking at social media, watching all these shows.
You're singing like a Little Mermaid. I want to go where the people are.
Not the Little Mermaid.
Hopefully we don't get a copyright strike for my awesome rendition.
I think you're safe there. Might do a cease and desist.
I might get cast in the live action. Who knows? I can play Ursula.
Goodness. Anyway, hey, we got some Edgar news coming up here. So for me, what I'm always excited this time of year is the Spotlight sale consignments were announced.
Yeah, we touched on it last week. I didn't touch on the fact that I was quite shocked to see that Alpines aren't represented this year for Spotlight. I guess nobody put in for it or nobody got accepted with their applications. Right. So quite a shocker. They're a very popular breed.
Yeah, it is. But, I did see that we got a few La Manchas. We got, there's a bunch of exciting animals in it this year. I've seen a lot of the breeders have started advertising.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's, building up the excitement towards it already. And you guys had touched on it last week, but I didn't get to touch on it. But anyway, that's out there again. Check them out. Jen and I, we just like watching the Spotlight sale. The excitement of it.
Yeah, I bet you do.
It's just fun watching.
It is. It's an exciting time. It'll be interesting to see how it goes this year after everybody's been pressed hard with COVID in their wallets.
Hopefully, so we'll since we didn't really have it last year, there's the bigger and fatter, thicker wallets, more money to spend.
I don't know. COVID's been rough. I know at our county fair, they have the youth livestock auction.
Yeah.
Where they sell, beef cows and pigs and all that good stuff. And numbers were shockingly low.
Really?
Yeah. Like pigs going for £4 or $4 a pound.
Yeah.
Where usually they're going for 12 or 15.
Well, at least here in where we are, hog prices are low anyway.
Yeah. But usually for like that kind of auction, it's kind of like Spotlight sale. You're going to pay more than what you usually would just because you're supporting it. And exactly.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. I have a feeling that it's going to be a little bit lower than usual, but hopefully I'm wrong. I mean, congratulations to everybody that was nominated to have their animal represented in the sale. And I hope you do well.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. The checks. Oh, I got some financials.
Yep. So financials came out for ADGA, and it appears that the office is still sitting on checks that have been sent by members since March. They have not been cashed and put into their account. It's going to create a mess, I feel like, and everybody's being a little bit nonchalant about it, that they're sitting on these checks. But my bank, I know if I were to write a check, and it were to be held for more than 180 days, they're not going to allow that to happen. They're like, null and void. Like, you didn't cash it in time. And that could be, first of all, did you ever see the Seinfeld episode where Jerry has all of his checks from his Nana that she sent him for his birthday? And it was like for like 20 bucks or something like that. And he kept them for all these years. And he got talked into cashing them by, I think it was Kramer.
Oh, no.
And he goes to cash them all and put them in his account or whatever. And all of a sudden, his Nana's account gets overdrawn and she has to go to the bank. And she hasn't been to the bank so long that she ends up in a seedy neighborhood where the bank used to be. And it was a huge fiasco. And I can just replay that episode in my head with Adga sitting on these checks for so long.
I go down to my bank and it's no longer where I think it is. And I get roughed up by the local ruffians.
And local ruffians. I feel like it's going to create issues. I feel like people that maybe have their ADGA funds in a different account, maybe they don't have a ton of money in there, and ADGA cashes their checks and their account gets overdrawn or something. I mean, like, as a business, you should be dealing with your business in a timely fashion to not create these kind of defuncts that will eventually happen.
Yeah, it's definitely something. I'm not an accountant. I'm not going to pretend to be. It's something that'll be interesting to see how it rolls out. I know we've sent money in, but most luckily for most of ours, it's been, you know, we transferred funds into our account and, you know, they've withdrawn it and paid it, but I know not everyone does that. So I
would also suggest for people that may have a balance that, you know, rolled over or whatever, to just check it to make sure it's all there, because I did see a post where somebody had a decent amount of money in their account and a lot of it is missing and uncalled for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
unaccounted for.
I know the situation, and I know you know who, and I know who it is. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it had gotten fixed, but she had to get her director involved.
Okay. Well, there might have been an update since I looked at it, I think, yesterday or today.
Yeah.
So
I could be wrong, but I think she had to get her director involved, and there were some double charges involved. Yeah, so I would just say check your account, check your expenditures, check your balance. Make sure that, you know, if you have money that's in there currently, make sure it's the amount that's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You should be doing this anyway. Anytime you have money, you know, or credit with any kind of business, keep an eye on it. And I would say if you've sent in a check sometime, you know, March or whatnot, and you check on it. Find out if it has been cashed. If it hasn't been cashed, I don't know, ask your bank or check with your, if you have anyone who's into accounting, what to do next. You know, should you reissue the check? Should you contact ADGA and say, hey, cash that, please? Either to cash it and put it on your account, or I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, I think if some people just go and check things out and be a little more proactive on it, maybe.
Here's my thing. How are they going to display the financials for ADGA knowing that they're sitting on a bunch of checks, right? So those numbers
at the board of directors meeting in October, they're all sitting around the tables and it's being projected up on the screen.
Right.
And these are the financials. Well, Yeah, I suspect since it's already been brought up, and I know a few of the directors who mentioned it, I'm hoping that it gets reminded that, well, what about, you know, were those checks all cashed?
Yeah.
You know, and are these numbers where we've double dipped into people's accounts?
Yeah. Lance, get your house in order.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to some brighter news. Since we're sponsoring a ring at the Son of a Buck show in Virginia, which is taking place on September 11th, just a friendly reminder to get your buck entries in if you decide to go to the show, and sign up for your collection if you decide to collect your buck there. So get those entries in. They seem a little bit low from the last I looked. There was only two breeds that were official, and I think it was Alpines and Nigerians. So
go, wow, go figure. Nigerian numbers are usually up there, and yeah, Alpines are pretty popular.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully, if you are looking to have years of continuous membership, you've already paid your AdGid membership for 2021. Quote, early bird memberships, you want $5 off full price. That started today. So if you want to get in on that, you can. That's just, that's out there.
Yeah. Get it in early, and
hopefully they don't lose it.
So shall we move on to our feedback? Our feedbag, yeah. I should say.
Yeah.
So the feedbag we're going to reach into this week and pull out a fresh scoop is also going to be our topic for the week, because it was a question that really made me sit down and think, and made you sit down and think. And I think this will be a perfect opportunity to turn one of our community members' questions into a full-blown episode. So here we go. This is from one of our younger listeners, Olivia. She goes, "Hey, I listened to your podcast, great job, by the way, and was wondering if you had any advice for a newer breeder on how to be patient when waiting for your breeding program. I have had goats for 5 years, but it has only been the past two that I've gotten interested in the registered side of dairy goats. I think I have a pretty good foundation of animals now, and I am excited for my kids next year. However, it can definitely be disheartening to go to AdGa shows and get your butt handed to you because of the intense level of competition. Alpines in the upper Midwest," she says. "As there are always nationally known breeders in the area, any tips for how to be patient and wait for your breeding program to develop?" So thank you, Olivia, for sending that in. Nate, when speaking privately about this, you said you wanted me to kind of start first, but it's a lot to unpack, right?
It is. So you go first on this, like, since we both have young herds.
We certainly do. I think we're the right people to answer this question. And Nate and I are by no means nationally renowned breeders or anything like that, but I feel that we're both pretty competitive breeders in our selected breeds in the Northeast. And, we can definitely speak on how to improve, and definitely how to work on being patient. Because Nate, you and I both know I'm not the most patient person in the world.
Right. Well, and we both have a different perspective and background on how, A, we got into goats, and B, how we started our current herds.
Right.
So you go first
I'll unpack it.
How do you get started, and how do you improve, or how are you improving, sort of thing?
Okay. So I've been in goats for 4 going on 5 years. We've started small and continue to remain small as we have a barn that fits a certain amount of animals at the moment, and we have to be smart on how we house our animals and how many we house and still keep it a healthy number, right? And be responsible about it. So we keep a very small herd. We started out with 3 bred does who were of pretty good show quality. We have I shouldn't say pretty good. They were decent show quality. We still have one who is a finished doe. But we started out with three, had them bred by a buck that we just had available to us, right? It wasn't really a choice. And our kids were just okay. And we continued using that buck the next year, and our kids were just okay. And then we realized, hey, if we want to get serious and be competitive in the show ring, because as Tierney mentioned last week, I am a competitive person, we decided to invest in our bucks, and we brought in our first herd sire as a junior and used him for a season. And then we brought in a second buck of equal or better quality. These bucks have gone on to appraise at VEE 88. And one has been on the young sire development list. And, you know, we really took our time to select what we could afford and the best quality we could afford, I feel. So when we started with that, we really saw improvements in our program. The best way I can put it is we went from middle of the pack to lead of the pack in local shows. For the most part, unless I was facing this guy named Nate Funk. So all in all, my belief is in a short amount of time, I've seen progress because of the bucks we invested in. And knowing that we're not going to breed a buck all the time to his daughters, we decided to bring in a second buck in order to be able to use those two for years to come. I really could keep both my bucks around for another five seasons if I wanted to, Nate. I really do believe that. Just the way we breed, we could off-kilter every year this buck to this daughter or this granddaughter, this buck to his granddaughter, and so on. As far as patience goes, I in the show ring, I totally get where you're coming from. As far as losing in the ring, it's never easy, but one does need to remind themselves that you're not in the ring to win every time. It's just not a goal to have. Yes, you want a goal to be competitive in the ring, yes, and it takes time to develop that. Really, what it comes down to is knowing that you have decent genetics to work with, investing in bucks, and making sure your husbandry is up to snuff, that you're feeding and taking care of those goats the best way you can to keep them in good condition. You can have the best genetics in the world, but if you're not feeding them right, then those genetics could just go down the toilet, right?
Right.
So I'll stop there and let you talk, because I could go on forever and ramble on forever. But let's hear what you got to say, and then I'm going to go through the list of what I wrote down to continue this discussion.
Okay. So, you know, just a little bit on John. John has in a men's dairy cattle background, you know, mm-hmm. not just dairy goats. But having that variety of knowledge with the cattle, it's still dairy animals. So he may have only had goats for 4 or 5 years. He came in having a little bit of background. That does help you, does it not?
Yeah, it does.
So you got to draw on the knowledge you have. I'm kind of fortunate. I was born into it. You know, I've been involved in goats for just over 46 years. I've owned goats probably for, you know, 30 of those or such. About 5 to 6 years ago, my wife and I decided to get back into goats. And I'd gone the process of, you know, in my youth, of having to try to breed up, you know, have my doe and try to find a better buck and, you know, take the, you know, what's born on the ground and find a way to just you know, breed up, and I'll speak a little bit more back on that in a moment. But at the same time, you know, my wife had also done that, and we came at it a little bit differently. We saved up money, we saved up pennies, we saved, made sure we had a chunk, and we had an opportunity to buy three does and a buck. And we knew the buck was pretty nice. And then we went out and we looked at the does, and we didn't recognize any of the names on any of the pedigrees. And I'll tell you, all those things we tell you to look for, you know, linear appraisal scores and champions and SGs, these does didn't have any of that when we bought them. And we brought them home, and we figured we were going to breed up using this buck. But we also realized that we could get some pretty nice animals for about what we paid for these mediocre does. And so we started building our herd by purchasing the what we thought were the best animals we could afford. And, you know, we'd save up, and we'd, you know, if we sold two or three kids, we saved that money, and we were able to, you know, buy another high quality animal with it. And some of them panned out, and, you know, they or their offspring are still in our barn. Some of them were hard lessons of buying based on papers. You know, you really want to acquire, if you're going to acquire new animals, get a look at them before you buy them. Or as much of a look at them as you can get. But we got this group of animals, and we started looking at them. We had the experience, you know, from showing for years and saying, okay, we like the mammary on this one, we like the top line here, and we've used that one buck. And that first buck earned us, we went to our very first national show, which is actually like the second year we showed, and as a herd. And we got second place, got a sire with our junior does, and second place best three junior does. And we were flying high, and, you know, but then there was the question of, well, now what? And we had to develop a breeding program, because we couldn't just breed these doelings back to their sire. And I feel like for a couple of years, we kind of bounced around. We had some bad luck, you know, buying a buck that set us back a year. And then we got lucky, and we bought a buck to replace that buck with, and he turned out to be stellar, and we ended up it was King, and he, as a junior buck, as a yearling, he finished in three rings at local buck show. He went best in show in one of those rings. We ended up collecting him. We still have one of his daughters in our barn. We'll plan to use them again in the future. I think before you can start developing a breeding program, you need to figure out what you've got and where you want to go and what you need to improve. And part of that is being in the show ring. And it's being in the show ring, it's looking at the animals in your barn critically. It's linear appraisal. It's also, quite frankly, sometimes just getting somebody else's opinion, whether it is a judge, an appraiser, another breeder. and get their opinion as to areas that need improvement, and see if you agree with that. And if you don't, you don't. You've got to like what you're looking at.
Right. So fast.
What?
Well, I was gonna fast forward a little bit here, and say that you also realized that there was other animal, or there was, after you guys used King, you guys decided to invest in an experimental book.
We did. We were given the opportunity to use an experimental book. Now, the situation with him was, Oberhassel is a color breed.
Mm-hmm.
So his dam, percentage wise, would have been American.
Mm-hmm.
But due to her dam not being conforming to breed standard, his dam was experimental, which made him experimental. Okay, so you needed the three generations in order for your Dolings to be American. Well, so his Dolings would be American. And we took a chance on him. And because we liked his dam's mammary, we liked the depth of body that his dam had, and the width, you know, just that width in the front end while keeping things tight. So we went with the experimental, and that's when we started looking at it and going, whoa, pieces started to come together in our brain. And this is where my wife and I, and, you know, we kind of differ from, you know, we saved up and we saved everything we could. And that spotlight sale came around and we knew what we wanted. What we wanted is we wanted a buck who would improve teat placement. Now, we didn't want the spotlight buck because he was a spotlight buck. We wanted him for what he would do for our animals. We wanted him for what he would improve, specific traits that he would improve in our herd, which we knew were our weakness, but were his strengths.
Well, as a marketing standpoint as well, it was a smart buy.
It was. It was. So. But the thing is, you know, our purchase of him wasn't solely for saying, hey, we bought the spotlight buck.
Right.
It was, we needed, quite frankly, we needed teat placement. We needed length of body. We wanted length of rump, length and levelness of rump, without sacrificing rear legs. Okay. And that's why we purchased it. So that's kind of an extreme, you know, going off and getting the spotlight sale animal. Now what our challenge is, we've got this gorgeous experimental buck. We got Leocadio, who's the spotlight sale buck. We've got these does who are descended from that first buck who got us second place at Nationals. Second place got a sire in the juniors. We've got a little bit of, not really of a burden, but we've got to prove that we're not just, you know, a monkey at a keyboard. You know, we're not just banging on the keys and saying, we're going to get something good by throwing these all together. We've got to now show that we had a plan. And what that plan, will that plan work out? I hope so. Will it not? If it doesn't work out, it's very expensive if it doesn't work out. But if it doesn't work out, what are we going to do to fix it? what's the next step?
Well,
and I think that's where we're moving into seeing your breeding program develop.
Well, yes. So I'm going to like refocus you here.
Yes, please. Back to Earth.
So you're with those purchases of those bucks, you've seen improvements in your herd slowly but surely, right? And for some of your lines, it's been quicker than others, right? So you've seen those improvements.
I think with some of the lines, definitely we've seen the improvements a little quicker, but we look at those lines and quite frankly, there's a little bit of line breeding, you know, the AdGut genetics calls it inbreeding percentage, but, you know, there's a little bit of the line breeding on those. And those lines that have a little bit higher on the line breeding are improving quicker than the ones with a lower percentage. Not saying, though, that the ones with a lower percentage aren't improvements. I mean, we've got some really sharp little yearlings that aren't, that don't have a high line breeding percentage. That are out of these two bucks. So, I mean, it's you've got to be looking for the improvements.
Yes. Well, in my case,
yeah.
Go ahead.
In explaining your case, one of the things I was thinking about was, and it really came down to like when you, and it was, thinking about how she mentioned being in the show ring with these nationally known breeders and the intense level of competition and, you know, standing, you know, behind them. I guess my thought is when you're standing behind them and you're hearing the same thing, you listen to those judges, not just one judge, but listen to all the judges when you get placed there, if it's repeatedly. And you will start hearing the same things being said or echoed. You know, for us, 2 years ago, quite frankly, or just before we made the decision to purchase Leocadia, we went through a whole show season where we didn't do well, and we kept hearing, and it was almost an echo, and I swear I hear it in my sleep, you know, teat placement, teat placement, teat placement, 1/2 for her advantage, teat memory in the area of teat placement. You know, it's 4 points, I know, but it might as well have been 40. But still, we heard that, and we said, okay, we need a buck who can help us fix teat placement, but we don't want to compromise this, this, and this. So when you're in that show ring and you're standing behind those nationally competitive herds, and your animal is, you know, the 1/2, well, why? Listen and find out why. Why is your animal 2? And then look for a buck. You know, if you're going to do with a breeding program, look for a buck that's going to improve that. You know?
Yeah.
So that's where I was going.
So there's definitely, with any breeding program, especially one that Olivia's said that she's been on the registered side of dairy goats for 2 years, it's a very young program. And I can sympathize with that because I've been in her shoes and still am in her shoes. I don't win at every show. And most of the time I'm standing behind somebody for the entire season. when we started out, our first show, the judge asked me if my goats were backyard pets, and that lit a fire inside me. I'm a very competitive person. Quite frankly, it ticked me off to high heaven. And I did my research and research and research and research. Nate can tell you, and my wife can definitely tell you, that I talk about goats 24/7. Almost to a fault. He does. Most definitely to a fault.
I've been told it's in your sleep too.
Yeah. So with that fire, is like I said before, we invested in bucks. That's going to be the easiest. Well, not easiest, but you'll see a difference in your breeding program quicker than if you buy a doe from an outside herd and bring her in and then go that route. You're not going to see the differences as quick as you would from a singular buck being used on your entire herd, or two bucks being used on your entire herd.
Oh, yeah, and I fully agree there. And it's a simple math game.
Yeah.
And, you know, the doe's going to give you one or two offspring a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a buck can give you one or two offspring per doe that he's bred to.
I mean, if you look at Mary Mac, I've had her a year. She's going to freshen next spring, probably in March. So I'll have had her almost an entire 2 years before I see what she does. Where Buck, I could bring him in, use him on a doe tomorrow.
Voss.
And see, yeah, I brought Voss in the spring, used him in October, had kids in March.
Yeah,
plural. So it was a, yeah, numerous kids to pick from in March. So you're just going to have a higher turnaround.
At the same time, a doe can be brought in with the intention of A, building a new dam line, but also with the intention of breeding her out, you know, an outside breeding from your current bucks, with the idea of getting a buck kid. And so now you've got the dam, you've got, you simply breed her to something outside, and now you've got A, a dam line, and B, a buck of your own breeding to use on your does. But there's a possibility there. But I agree. Buck is going to have more of an impact on a herd than a doe.
Exactly. The next point on our list here is patience, young grasshopper. And this is one that took me a long time and I still struggle with. But there's a timetable of how fast things are going to improve. And you need to remain patient and trust the process, right? It's just simple as that. You just need to sit and wait in some instances.
It's hard.
It is.
You know, it
really is.
It's, I think the best way to describe it is like baking bread. Okay, you mix it all together, and then you gotta wait. Wait to see it rise. Gotta wait for it to bake.
And hope it doesn't fall.
Right. You know, for us, yeah, that was, you know, when we started, you know, with the direction, we don't want to be seen as just goat owners. We want to be goat breeders.
Mm-hmm.
And you do a breeding and you're excited for that breeding, and you've got to wait that 5 months or 150 days for them to be born. And then they're born and you get to look at them and go, ooh. Well, first off, you find out whether it's a doe or a buck that's born. But then it's like, ooh, you know, I like this. I don't like that. You make a decision right then and there as far as, did it work? But then you've got to make the decision of, do you wait a year or two to see if it worked? You know, does the doe freshen with that memory that you hope she does based upon her sire or her dam's memory? You know, was it a successful breeding? You won't know for a year or two, or maybe even three. And that's the part that's a killer. If you have an old dairy barn, you know, one of these those great barns that are dotting the Northeast, or even parts of the U.S., you know, those old large barns, and you've got plenty of room where you can hold on to them and have, you know, 40, 60, 100 does. God bless you. And, you know, you can hold on to them for 3 years and say, yeah, I like that buck. At which point, though, now he's an aged buck. Some of us, like John, myself, we don't have the luxury of endless amounts of room. You got to make a decision, or right, mm-hmm. almost right away. You got to look at that kid and go, I like it.
Yeah.
It stays. I don't like it. It goes. Okay. And then you sit and you wait for that, you know, bread to bake, you know, the dough to grow up. And then for her to be bred and freshen and mature, and let that udder mature, let that doe mature. And was she what you were hoping for when you bred her dam?
And
that's where the patient grasshopper comes in. And hopefully you're able to take that doeling to junior shows and show her and have her do well and be like, okay, I got the general appearance and dairy strength and body capacity going for me. Let's hope on this mammary.
Well, I'll be honest and say that patience is not my virtue. I have 2 yearling milkers in the barn right now. One of which I'm absolutely in love with. She's a beautiful doe, and she should mature beautifully and easily finish. The other one, all year I've been threatening to sell. And then she's, in the last 3 weeks, has matured and looks pretty nice. There's still things that need improvement on her. But she's matured enough and it's gotten me the look enough where I'm going to be patient and give her another freshening. And see how she turns out.
Right. And I think that's the thing where you've got to trust the process.
Mm-hmm. How many times, Nate, do I question my breeding program?
Daily.
And crab about it. And
daily.
And threaten to sell everything and start over.
Once a month.
Yeah.
But you know, you've got to.
Everybody goes through that.
You've got to trust what you're doing. If what you're doing has a purpose, if you're breeding, if you've got this buck, you know, this is going to be your general appearance buck. He's going to help you fix, you know, XYZ. If you have the opportunity to have another buck, you know, maybe this one's your mammary buck and he's going to help you, with fore attachments or rear attachments. And if you do have a third buck, maybe he's got a little bit of both or something. Or if you just have one buck, and you're one buck at a time, hopefully that one buck is, you know, you have him for a purpose. You know, it's that you're not just, the purpose isn't just to make your does pregnant so they'll freshen next year, but they have a purpose for improvement. As breeders, we should be constantly trying to improve
mm-hmm.
upon what we have. You know, we've got a yearling out here. She finished as a yearling. She's gorgeous. We're asking, you know, we look at to ourselves, okay, what are our weaknesses? Where do we want an improvement on her? You know, you should be constantly asking yourself that. Even if you do end up in front of those nationally recognized breeders, you should be asking yourself, what do I need to improve on? And how do I do that? And your box should be answering those questions. Hopefully your box aren't just to get them bread. You know, and I guess it also, you know, your improvements in constantly improving has to tie into what are your goals? You know, when I was in 4-H, there was a guy, he actually lives halfway between John and I. And he had this herd of alpines. They were big, big does, huge mammaries. And they always placed middle of the class near the end, and he didn't care. Because when they went into the milk room for milking contest, he dominated milking contest.
Yeah.
His goal, his purpose for them was production. Right. He wanted them to be middle of the line because he wanted to make sure that they're, you know, to show that they could produce without having, you know, crap udders.
Well, they're not like falling. They have to have the body in order to
right
hold on to that big mammary.
Right, but for him, his goal was more the production. You know, my wife and I, we prefer more of the type. But I know there's other people that are counterparts over there at GoCab who prefer production. You know. And I there's nothing wrong with that. It's kind of like, I like tomatoes, and some people like tomatoes.
Right. Well, I think it's important to have attainable goals for your program. I know, like, this year we set out to have our first Oberhaus League Grand Champion, and we've met that twice, one of them with a homebred dough. One of our goals was to place well against a certain breeder who we've been showing against since we started. And we've done that. And now we're looking at goals for next year with our first nationals and how we want to meet that. I won't go into those goals, but it's important to have those goals, but also make sure they are attainable. You know, you don't want to go to your first show or your first nationals and be like, oh, I want a grand champion, right? It's probably not going to happen. If it does, congratulations, you're a phenom.
Yeah.
But with those goals and keeping that in mind, there's another aspect of your program that you need to look at harshly, and that's who needs to be culled from your herd. When we first started with our first three does, two out of the three had mammaries. One was tilted. You couldn't even see the teats from behind. The other one was pendulous. Decent bodies, not great bodies. Very old school looking Oberhausleys, you know, roachy, productive, yet flawed would be the best way to put it. And I quickly realized that after my second year of having kids hit the ground and not getting what I want, that I did need to make calls. And I did need to invest in bucks. So don't be afraid to sell animals that aren't meeting the requirements for your current herd. I'm not saying sell everything to cut off your nose and spite your face, right? I'm saying be thoughtful with what animals are in your herd. If you can keep an animal that would, if your goal is to do well in the show ring, that would maybe do better than a certain animal in your herd. And sometimes it's just smarter to cut ties and keep those daughters that should be an improvement over their dams and build from there. The one thing and black hole that not a lot of people realize with cutting hard and culling hard like we have is that your herd gets awful young, awful quick. With being that young, don't expect to win right away. In the junior ring, sure, but in a dojo, adult does. If you're showing yearlings, there's probably a good chance that you're not going to be winning. Just the fact of the matter, most judges look for that maturity. So definitely don't think that you've done something horribly wrong. You need to trust the process and know that those young does that you now have in your herd do need time to mature.
I agree here. We made the mistake of buying some does based upon what they were and not necessarily what they looked like or the promise that they had. We bought, we bought a doe who was a reserve national junior champion. When we bought her, she had a really nice general appearance. This cute little mammary. But, within a year, that mammary was more than we could handle. More than she could handle. She did end up on the top 10 for production. For the breed. But we realized we couldn't do her justice or really deal with that adequately.
She was definitely meant for a dairy setting.
Right. So even though we had quite a bit invested in her, we cut ties with her. We found someone who had plan of how to help her, how to get her on the right track and take care of her adequately. And we sold her. We had another doe who had probably one of the nicest memories at that time that in our herd. But we had trouble just looking at her body. It wasn't a body style we liked. And again, we had a bit invested in her, but we cut ties. We culled. And sometimes it's something like that. Other times culling is you have five really nice doe kids, but you only can keep four. And you have to start asking yourself, well, what's your goal for your breeding program? Which ones are going to probably benefit by staying? And you might even get to the point where you could say, which ones might benefit by going to somebody else, someone else who can focus on them a little bit more. Then they can be focused on here. We sold, John keeps talking about and keeps mentioning Merrimack. And Merrimack went, we sold John Merrimack because we felt he could focus on her more than we could and give her the attention that we couldn't at that time, with four other dolings.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, yeah, you've got to make those hard decisions, those hard calls. You make that cut, and you'll find is the animals you have will do better. And then, again, it's a numbers game. If you have six goats in a pen, you take two of them out, and you give the same amount of feed that you were giving to the six, to the four, they're going to have more feed. Or you're going to be able to feed a little less and save money on your feed bill.
Mm-hmm.
I believe culling is a key thing. The other thing I would say to, our listener, Olivia, is a question is she involved in linear appraisal or milk testing? She's mentioned she's involved in showing. Mm-hmm. Some of these programs may go, are kind of counterintuitive. I've heard some great debates on linear appraisal versus showing. Doe who does great in linear appraisal may not do well in the show ring. Yep. And vice versa. But it will help you linear appraisal is such a valuable asset to have. If you can do it this year, linear is kind of, well, it's got its own issues this year. Hopefully by next year, they'll be able to catch up on many of these herds who didn't get to do linear and repeat on those who did. But there's so much information that you gain through a linear appraisal session that it's invaluable. The value, you can't place a value on it. I would encourage you to follow through on a linear appraisal session with your animals. You'll learn a lot. Do you agree, John?
I do. Linear appraisal showing, milk test is all important to gauge how your animals set within ADGA, right? If you cannot get appraised, it doesn't hurt to, if you have a mentor or a breeder friend that's maybe has been in it longer, somebody you look up to, it doesn't hurt to shoot them a couple pictures, or if they live close by, have them come over and look at your herd and kind of get a different set of eyes on them to evaluate them yourselves and really gauge what needs to be improved on. Because every herd is going to have something throughout most of the time that sets them apart as far as improvements that are needed. In my case, it's front ends. Others, it could be feet and legs, you know, it could be anything.
Right.
So if you have somebody that you can lean on and talk to, and, you know, even on Facebook Messenger, send pictures, it's definitely helpful to keep you on the right path. I know I've sent Nate and Jennifer and Brandy Giacchino and Jessica Miller and all these people hundreds of pictures with me whining or me saying, you know, I don't like this and this and this. And then, shoot, I had one of my best milkers in my barn. I'm going to sell this one. And Kurt Schnipke and Brandy Giacchino going, whoa, 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 whoa. Hold up. Why are you selling her? Oh, well, I don't have space. Do you have anything worse in your barn? Probably. Call it.
Okay.
So that, well, hold on. So that was a very important thing for me to be able to do, was lean on other breeders to help gauge where you're at.
So I'm going to kind of take what you're saying, and I'm going to say I fully agree with it. But here's one of the things I'm going to point out. So John and I, obviously, as many people know, we breed Oberhaslers. We don't have the same herd. I'm like 2.5, almost 3 hours away from John. Mm-hmm. But I would say, you know, Olivia mentioned that there's some, you know, nationally known breeders in the area. Many of these breeders are highly approachable.
Yes.
And as a new breeder, you're kind of timid because you're looking at them and you're seeing all the national Grand Champion or Reserve Grand Champion awards, and you're like, I can't approach them. I can't ask them to look at my goats for their opinion. And mm-hmm. I would say, do. You know, John, you almost cold called, no, not called, but Brandy. You know, you send a picture of an animal. I think that's how you pretty much met her. Was
oh yeah, life. I was just picking out Orion, and was between him and his twin, and I messaged Brandy Giacchino, who doesn't know me from a hole in the wall, and I didn't know exactly her history. I knew that she was a decent Oberhasli breeder, and yeah, just messaged her out of the blue and said, hey, my name's John Kane and I breed Oberhasli in New York. What do you think about these two? I'm trying to pick between them, you know, type deal. And
and she gave you an opinion.
She did. She said, nice to meet you. This is what I think. What are you trying to improve?
So,
yeah.
That's my point is, you know, approach these folk.
Yeah.
You know, they're there. They've got a large pool of knowledge and experience. Especially if you're young, many people are more than willing to help a young breeder get started. Especially if they're willing to ask questions and work hard. I'd say, you know, approach them. You know, both in Kurt, I've messaged Kurt and said, hey, what do you think about this? And he'll tell me, you know, and, you know, we'll be up late, you know, messaging periodically. And
yeah, he's one honest dude. He'll tell you, he'll cut it dry.
Well, and they both will. And
yep.
I'll message, you know, again, you know, over Hosley World, I'll message Mark and or Megan or, you know, people who've been in it a lot longer than me, get their opinions. The other thing that helps is some of these people who've been in it for a long time and are nationally known breeders, many of them are judges also. So it wouldn't hurt to hear what they have to say. They know about evaluating. Same time, you just, if you're relatively new in it, keep perspective. It's going to be hard. You know, I would say, like, when we went to our first nationals, we said to ourselves, we just want to make the cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't care how we place. We just want to make the cut. Such that when we did place, we were just, and we were in cloud nine. We were caught a little off guard.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying be that way at your local show or at a state club show or an other club show. Just, you know, set yourself a realistic goal show wise. And yeah, know that, okay, this person may be there with you know, this doe and that doe. I want to place near them. Mm-hmm. But also realize if we have three does, we'll call them Biddy, Betty, and Body. If Biddy is this really awesome doe that everybody loves, and Betty and Body have structural issues and, you know, general appearance that isn't as good, or the mammary is not as good. They may not change the placings over what I say, the first doe. Okay. But you can breed them to bucks that will improve the kids in those areas, so that maybe their kids might be able to beat that doe someday, or at least the doe offspring.
Well, you mentioned keeping things in perspective, and I want to touch on the fact that, first of all, winning isn't everything.
Exactly. Right?
It's not. Yeah, I've learned a lot in being placed fourth all year behind somebody's does than I would have if I just got first every time, right? It's also has helped me with patience. But I will say, to keep perspective, sometimes with winning, you get a little big for your britches and you go to a show and you get smoked, right? Yep. You and I have both had that happen last year.
Yep.
I believe at the Oberhosley specialty this year, I walked in expecting a win with a junior and walked out of that ring with my tail tucked between my legs. And quite frankly, I was quite bitter and angry internally, and probably a little bit externally. I was a little bit of a crybaby.
but you appeared to take it well.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad I appeared to take it well. but with that said, getting your butt kicked in the ring, like Olivia put it, I don't know about anybody else, but it really builds a fire within me to do better. And with that fire, from our first show ring that we ever entered to now, I feel like that drive has only made us pretty darn good in the ring in a short amount of time. And it continues to drive us to get better and better. The best part of showing, especially with like county fairs, is when they do group classes and you're winning Dam and Daughter, because it's supposed to be a improvement from the Dam to the Daughter. And
yes,
continuing to get first place just shows me that we're on the right path. So I think just keeping everything in perspective and not getting down on yourself because you're not winning all those ribbons. Just know that, be patient, work hard, and your time will come.
I mean, for me, it's, you know, I've 30 some years of showing, and it's
old man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I am old. Anyway, you know, I've stood my a lot of time at the end of the class, you know, going, what, how'd that happen? You know, I've even stood, you know, that third place where you're hoping that your doe would get first and she's third. I don't even get to go back in for senior champion. What? It happens. And yeah, I think you just gotta, yeah, winning's not everything. You've got to be happy with what you have in your barn.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing, is when you're showing, you're getting one person's opinion on the animal and that group of animals on that given day. And the other thing is that person's opinion, they might prefer dairy animals over type E animals, you know, production animals over type. At which point you could have a doe that looks nice, but she's not a dairy doe. You know, so you've got to like what's in your barn. If you like what's in your barn, it can be frustrating standing behind those people, but you've got to like what's in your barn.
Yeah, I agree. There's no really right answer to Olivia's questions. It's really just, honestly, if I had to sum it up, which we're going to right now, if I had to sum it up, it's, if you want to improve your herd, invest in decent bucks, make sure your animals, our husbandry needs are being met. That's really the big thing. So invest, husbandry, boom. Create goals.
Any tips on how to be patient and wait for your breeding program to develop? Is have a big picture.
Mm-hmm. Goals.
Be a big picture goal, but also within that big picture, have smaller goals.
Yes.
I want to find a buck who fixes pastings. Mm-hmm. I found the buck. I bred him to my doe. Look at the pastings on those doe kids that are a week old. Wow. Check mark.
Or, you know, I want to get fifth place in a show ring. Or so-and-so is going to be at a show. I want to try to get, you know, within a couple placings of them or whatever. Goals are really important. I mean, I sit down and write goals all the time. My goals for next year is a mile long. And I have to, like, really read through them and weed out the ones that I don't think will be attainable. But I mean, goals are super important, and that's what keeps you driven. That's what keeps you going. Also, if you're just getting into showing, it's your second year of raising registered goats, enjoy it. It's supposed to be fun. Like, just have fun with it. And yes, work hard to try to reach those goals. But also, like I said, winning isn't everything. Have fun in the ring. Sometimes I lose sight of that. I know sometimes, Nate, you lose sight of that too.
Well, and that's where that goat family that we develop, which helps mm-hmm. me keep it all fun, helps us remember it's all for fun. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing to do. You know, your mentors can eventually evolve into your goat family.
Yeah.
You know, or for that matter, find a bunch of people of like-minded individuals, and, you know, there you go. You've got a goat family.
Start a group messenger on Facebook. I know we've done it, and it's fun.
You know, we've done it a couple times, a few times. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, but find yourself a mentor who you can ask, you know, blunt questions. Keep it fun. Keep it exciting. But as far as being patient, have a big picture goal and then many, many littler ones. We usually do annual. We have a big goal, but then we also have many, many littler goals.
Yeah, so, I agree.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Olivia, thank you so much for writing in. That was a good question. As soon as you messaged me personally and we spoke about it personally, I knew that it was something that we could spend some time talking about here on the podcast. So thank you for that feedback question. And anybody that has any questions for us, you can message us on Ringside and American Dairy Goat Podcast on Facebook. We have a page there. You could message personally myself or Nate Funk.
Yep. Yep.
Or you could reach out to us on our Instagram and we'll answer on there as well. So I think this is a good spot to wrap up. I'm going to try to get us a guest for next week, Nate, and change things up. But until then, everybody, y'all have a good week. Nate, thanks for being on.
You're welcome.
Folks, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast. We'll catch you on the next one. Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.